Which players are on the move, and what impact will that have on the teams involved? Jim Duquette will fill you in now in the On the Move podcast, presented by Penske.
And welcome into the inaugural On the Move podcast. It is Matt Wehmeyer alongside Jim Duquette. And Duke, we are speaking on April Fool's Day, but no fooling here because opening day is just a couple of days away. Sunday, April 3rd, three games kick off the 2016 season. Then things get underway in earnest on Monday, April 4th with the traditional opening day, if you will. And Duke, you know, it seems like every year two things kind of occur in my eyes. Not only does the baseball season come up quicker than the previous year, but opening day seems to get bigger and better and more festive. And to that end, we really have two opening days this year, if you will, for the first time in baseball history. Lots to look forward to.
Yeah, I like the way that they have it matched up, too. Just by coincidence, you have the matchup of the World Series teams. That's never happened before, of course. And then you have one of the matchups from the wild card in the American League with the Yankees and Astros on Monday. But I think the Sunday matchups, when you have three teams like that, I like the more baseball you can get on that day, the better. And it makes me wonder, are we going to have more games on Sunday going forward? But the fact that the whole winter goes so fast, that just means we're getting older faster. And it's the good and the bad. I love opening day, but, I mean, I feel like it's going too quickly.
Yeah, it does. And I get what you mean, kind of that double-edged sword. But, again, it just seems like with the news cycle that we're in now with with social media and so much attention being given to not just the games, but with everything that happens in the off season, is there really an off season anymore? In my eyes, it's hard to say there's really an off season.
I've always felt that from an off season standpoint, it should be renamed to the winter season. I've said it many times. There, off season is a misnomer. Off season from playing baseball, but there is more activity in the wintertime now than there ever has been. It continues to get more and more. And there's so many people that are on the move. From a trading standpoint, signing standpoint, you name it, there really isn't much time off. And from a general manager's side of things, there really hasn't been days off and time off from baseball. But I think you're right with the social media and how much attention it's gotten. I think baseball's done a terrific job of engaging fans pretty much 365 days out of the year.
Right. And like you said, it's really a misnomer. It's not the off season anymore. It really is the winter season. But having said all of that, I got to think that no matter, how many years you've been in the game, how old you get, how many games that you've seen, there's something about opening day. You wake up and it's, baseball's back and these games count, and there's no duplicating that.
No, and you know what? I think there's hope for your team with very few exceptions. There's a couple of teams that are rebuilding, and mostly in the National League, and then pretty much everybody else. When you're starting at square one, you throw away the spring training records, good or bad. There's some teams that really had good spring trainings. You start at 0-0. You had some bad spring trainings. You haven't won a game in about 3 weeks, like the New York Mets. You know what? You start at 0-0 starting on opening day. And I think that's always the thing is you get off to a good start, and sometimes you see teams kind of use that momentum and roll into having a good season. So, yeah, I think it's – and there's just a different energy level on a Monday starting your week off. Some people don't go to school on that day. They're going to opening day. I mean, it's almost like you have to go to your doctor. You get a sick note so you can go to opening day. That kind of stuff, there's plenty of stories about that, going to that first opening day, or just, people going year after year to the ballpark on that particular day. It's such a special day.
And without veering too far off topic here, I know there's been debate in recent years that opening day should be a national holiday.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I think that. Why not?
Yeah.
I think I'll be all for it. I don't know if we're going to get too much support down the road for people, especially non-baseball folks. But I mean, why not? I'm with you. I will say this: we'll have more excused absences if they decide to make it a national holiday and give everybody the day off. I think people would like that.
Why not? Just make it official. But like you said, parents and kids can get creative on opening day. Little Billy's got a cough. He can't come to school. He's going to be watching opening day at the ballpark of his favorite team. So there are ways to get around it until it becomes an official national holiday. We'll see what happens given time down the road. But for now, an unofficial official holiday is opening day. So once again, this is the On the Move podcast presented by Penske. And Duke, kind of the theme of this podcast is talking about guys that have either move to a new team in the offseason, guys that could be on the move, maybe a guy in the minor leagues that could get called up to the big time before season's end, or guys that maybe are in new roles, maybe more prominent roles, given circumstances with injury or underperformance. And to that end, let's kind of kick things off with maybe what is the biggest news item of the past 48 hours, at least, with the Boston Red Sox, that their $95 million man, Pablo Sandoval, who signed that big free agent contract at the beginning of the last offseason to join the Red Sox, is going to be a bench player, at least for the time being. So Pablo is on the move, not to a better place, but from the starting third base position to the bench. Travis Shaw, who's in his mid-20s and is in a pretty good cameo with the Red Sox in the latter half of last year, which was a lost season for the Red Sox, finishing in last place. But it did give him the opportunity to showcase his skills. He impressed then. He impressed during spring training. He is on the move to being the Red Sox new starting third baseman. What do you make of all this?
Well, this is as much of a competition that they had in the spring. This is a combination of Shaw performing well and Sandoval really not, and losing his job. If you go back even last year, this started last year. Shaw, as you mentioned, had a good year last year. Sandoval finished up poorly. He hit .210 the last 2 months of the season. His power numbers were down, and there was talks about him being out of shape. And so they talked to him about coming in better shape, which has always been an issue for him. Mm-hmm. And he didn't come in very good shape. And then he didn't play well in the spring, and Shaw basically stole the job from him, took it because he performed well. And no one was really sure how he'd handle a third base job, but he handled it pretty well defensively too. So I think that's the big surprise to me is he handled it defensively well enough where it pushed Pablo to the bench. And I don't know if this is a long-term move or a short-term move. I don't even know if the Red Sox know this, but I love it because it's the Red Sox are about winning, you know, and they're not worrying about the contract as much. And I think Dave Dombrowski, the GM there, president, and John Farrell, the manager, they're sending a message to people. If you don't perform, we're not going to play you. And that's the bottom line. I think you know, Shaw was certainly deserving of it. And Pablo, you know, he played himself to the bench.
And you mentioned Dave Dombrowski. I give him a lot of credit in that he's not being held hostage by some of the, you know, iffy contracts that Ben Cherington gave out before he was dismissed from his role as a Red Sox GM. And right at the top of that list in terms of iffy contracts, if you will, is the one given to Pablo Sandoval. And he told John Farrell, the Red Sox skipper, look, I'm not a guy that's going to let salary dictate playing time. If you're not performing well, you're not going to play. Bottom line, we saw that manifest itself at another position with the Red Sox. Ruzne Castillo was given $70 million plus. The Cuban defector, he's going to begin the season not even as the fourth outfielder, maybe the fifth outfielder behind Chris Young. Brock Holt's going to be given a platoon with Young in left field based on lefty-righty matchups. So two prime examples right there of Dave Dombrowski saying, I don't care how many zeros are in your paycheck, what that contract says, if you're not performing, you don't play.
Right, and I think that's what you try to do that if you're an organization. A lot of times you don't have the depth. A lot of times you're going on the salary dictates the playing time. In this particular situation, these two examples, they're not doing it. And I like it. I like it because, listen, Holt made the All-Star team. He was a really a valuable player and has been for the Red Sox. He can go out and play left field. I've seen his outfield play. It's not bad. It's better than you think. It's the solid average out there. So, you know, if that combination, you know, platoon with Young and Holt, I think has a chance to be very productive as well. So, you know, again, Red Sox going through some things. The one thing that you can say about the Red Sox, it's been unacceptable the way they've played for the last few seasons. Outside of the World Series year, they've been in last place, the other three.
Right.
So I think that's the thing, the message that they're sending, and I think the fan base kind of appreciates it.
Yeah, I think so, too, and I think it's no secret that John Farrell, given the Red Sox struggles the last 2 years, if they don't get off to a hot start or at least a decent start in April, his job could very much be in jeopardy given recent history with the Red Sox the last couple years. So that was the big moving and shaking in Red Sox camp the past couple of days. Travis Shaw in, Pablo Sandoval out at third base, at least, like you said, Duke, for the time being. Elsewhere in the AL East, with the pitching configuration with the reigning division champions, the Toronto Blue Jays, I think it was assumed that when Drew Storen made the move, if you will, from Washington to Toronto, that he was going to be anointed the new closer, despite the success that Roberto Osuna had last year for the division champion Blue Jays. Osuna, only 20 years old, I believe he's still the youngest player in Major League Baseball. But the Blue Jays made a decision that, you know what, having Storen's nice, he's got a great track record, but we like what we've got in the bullpen with Osuna. Storn's going to be a setup guy, and you know, I love the faith that they're placing in their very young closer.
Well, and it's something that they know. It's a familiarity. They know he can handle the pressure. I didn't know if he could handle it last year. I don't think they did either, but he did. And so, you know, when you do that, you perform, you win the division, get into the postseason, you handle all those that pressure situation, you should have the inside track. And I think he did, you know, he when they brought over Storn, I think everybody, like you mentioned, thought, okay, Storn's going to be in the mix. He'll probably win it because he's the veteran guy. But you go, if you made it a competition in the spring, which they kind of did, their numbers are very similar. Osuna's and Storn's aren't much different. And if you're John Gibbons, it's the bird that you know, or the hand, you know, the hand in or the bird in your hand that you know, versus the guy at Storn coming over and going, well, I like him. I think he's going to be good, but I don't really know. And so I think they're making the right move. Storn's there in case you need a backup. You need a you know, the landing spot if Osuna struggles a little bit, and he can, you know, certainly pitch you know, the rest of the season in either the eighth or the ninth inning. The only thing that concerns me a little bit, Storn's numbers as a non-closer, his ERA is close to 4 mm-hmm. versus his closer's number when he's in his ERA is in the 2s. And so I'm curious how he's going to handle it. You know, he's changing leagues. The American League's a little tougher hitting league. And he's going into a role that he hasn't pitched well in. We'll wait and see how it all develops. But it shouldn't be that big of a deal. But Storn struggled in that role, the last couple of years when he's been in the eighth inning.
Yeah, silver lining for Storn, though, the one lineup he will not have to face, Toronto's.
Thank goodness, right.
A team that scored almost 900 runs last year, led the world in every major hitting category. No reason to think that will change in 2016. So, again, that's one lineup he will not have to contend with in his first season in the American League. And then when you shift from the bullpen to the rotation, I mean, it's easy to say, well, they're going to be weaker because David Price is no longer there. He's with a division rival now in Boston. But I think that they are quietly very confident in two guys that are moving up to more prominent roles in Aaron Sanchez and Marcus Stroman. And they're saying, hey, okay, Price isn't here. We get that. But we're looking at two guys here that could become, that have the potential to become a great 1-2 dynamic duo in baseball.
You know, and Stroman, before he got injured, was a top of the rotation type starter, and he came back, surprised a lot of people, came back at the end of the year and has pitched at that level. And he's embracing that role. I'm not going to doubt the guy. Yeah, he's got really good stuff. He's got great makeup. So I think he's interesting. To me, the Sanchez move with Drew Hutchinson, who ends up getting that rotation spot last year, now he moves to the pen. Sanchez pitched well enough in the spring, and I think his stuff is good enough that he can be a really good starter for them. I'll be curious what kind of innings pitch limits they have, if he can handle that. You know, that third pitch, the developing pitch, is the changeup for him. But I like that upside. They're developing some young arms there. And that's the way they have to do things, I think, in Toronto. They can manage their payroll in a lot of different ways. And maybe a way to keep the position players like Batista and Encarnacion is to have some really young pitching, inexpensive pitching. And Sanchez is, I think, a part of that plan. We'll see. If he doesn't, we know he can pitch in the bullpen. He's done that well over the last year and a half in the bullpen. And, you know, he had some closer's role before Osuna. He's pitched in the eighth inning before. He's got dominating stuff. We'll see on that. But I really like the move. I've been supportive of that, him going to the rotation.
And I think what's good, too, is that, you know, these young guys, they're going to have bumps in the road inevitably. But you've got such a lethal lineup behind you. You can afford to do that. I mean, you're not throwing a guy out there with a weak hitting lineup behind you. If you give up a couple homers, give up 4 or 5 runs, you could still get a win because you've got that great lineup behind you. So it allows them the chance to fail and to struggle and to not completely lose your self-confidence because, like you said, you've got that tremendous lineup behind you in Toronto. We mentioned Duke, David Price, who is no longer in Toronto. He was one of many guys on the move earlier this offseason to a different team. Price going from, the Tigers to begin the season, traded to the Blue Jays, helped them get to the postseason for the first time in a long time, and now he signs that massive free agent deal with the Red Sox. He was not the only one. We saw Zach Greinke sign a major free agent deal to join the Diamondbacks, and other prominent pitchers change teams as well. Johnny Cueto, Jeff Samardzija both land with the San Francisco Giants. Jordan Zimmerman ends up going from the Nationals to the Tigers. So when you look at this big mix of pitchers that are changing teams, what to you is going to be the most determining factor as to whether they fail or succeed in their first years with their new teams?
Well, the high-profile guys for me were Price and Zimmerman and Greinke. They signed some big deals. They're north of $100 million. There's some other guys, obviously, signed, and we know Cueto has two. But I think when you look at it, you know, Greinke came in to be their number one. Price came in to be the number one. And so there's probably the most pressure on those two individuals. I think Zimmerman certainly going in to be a big part of that rotation, right behind Verlander. I think that fits. In San Francisco, you got Bumgarner always is taking on that workload. So those other guys, they can kind of slot in right behind him, and there's maybe less pressure there, even though they'll have their own set of pressures that they put on themselves to try to live up to the contract. But to me, the two that stand out are Price, and he's familiar with the American League East, so I don't worry about his at all. And Greinke. And Greinke, to me, has probably the most pressure because when he signed in L.A., no one thought he could handle that because, you know, he had some anxiety issues. But he was settled in right behind Kershaw. Now he's the guy. Now the target is on him. He's the big gun that came in. They took him away from the Dodgers. He's going to help them hopefully win the division or if not, you know, be in the wild card spot. And I don't know how he's going to handle that, but honestly, you know, I think he'll handle it well, but he's going to a hitter's park at Chase Field. It's not that easy to pitch there. He does have some pitcher's parks that he can pitch in later. Obviously, the Dodgers, Giants, that we know there in San Diego. I think if you look at all of them, he's the one guy that I don't question because he's a really, really good pitcher. I wonder, can he live up to the high expectations of the Diamondbacks fan base?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot to handle, especially, as you said, coming from not just any other team, but a fierce division rival in L.A. But given all that, I mean, we are talking about a guy that is a Cy Young winner in the American League with the Kansas City Royals. So he has been thrust in that light, in that position, as being the guy, the undisputed ace of his staff. How much more confidence can that give him that, you know what, I'm making this transition again. I'm going to be the number one guy again. How much can that help him?
Well, I think it helps him a little bit. You know, Kansas City, those were some, you know, at that point, they weren't very good teams. So it's a little different in that sense. But high revenue teams with the marketplace like the L.A., I think there are some similarities. He wasn't the guy, but he was still considered one of the guys, you know, and had a lot of attention placed on him in Los Angeles. So I think the combination of those two, plus you get a little older, a little bit more mature, I think all of those things kind of combine to help out, you know, a player like Greinke. And I've seen guys, where early on in their careers, they didn't handle certain situations well, and then as they became more mature and they got more opportunities, they grew into that role. So do I think he can handle it? I don't see why not. He's that good. I think it's just a matter of, you know, pitching the way he's capable of doing, throwing that, you know, fastball away like he likes to do with a real power changeup. He's got the good breaking ball, two different breaking balls. So, you know, I think he'll mix and match. And you know, again, getting off to a good start is always, you know, the better, the more preferential if you can pull it off.
Once again, this is On the Move, presented by Penske. Matt Wehmeyer joined today by Jim Duquette, just days away from opening day 2016. So to kind of wrap up the talk on Greinke, this is a guy that's, you know, in L.A., I think it, despite the numbers he put up, you know, Clayton Kershaw was still the face of that rotation, the ace of that staff. Greinke was a 1A. Now he's moving to the undisputed one right position with Arizona, with Shelby Miller, a solid number two behind him as Arizona completely remade their staff in the offseason. Another guy that, you know, I'm always intrigued by guys who, while they may not be changing teams, even though Zach Greinke did, and Ken Giles also changed teams. I think the bigger shift, the biggest transition is not from team to team, but in terms of embracing a more prominent role, as Greinke's doing as now the ace of that Arizona staff, and Ken Giles, he goes from being the closer of a Philadelphia team, clearly rebuilding, to now the closer of an Astros team that has World Series aspirations. He's a young guy. He's got he's put up great numbers the past couple of years in Philadelphia. But how much of a shift is that for a guy mentally to know, okay, you know, the spotlight is really on me now, especially for a team that we all saw them melt down in game 4 of the ALDS against the team that eventually won the whole thing, the Royals. They were that one piece away from taking down Kansas City, maybe advancing to the World Series themselves. We'll never know. Now the spotlight's on him. How's he going to handle that?
Well, and I think there's a couple things. First off, I remember talking to him last year. You learned a lot about the closer's role from Jonathan Papelbon, who you know, despite his other issues, handled that role very well and handled pressure very well both in Boston and Philly. So he has the experience from that side of things to be able to talk through that aspect. Going to the Astros, a contender, it's a whole different mindset. There's definitely more pressure there. He does have Luke Gregerson there as a fallback. Gregerson was their closer last year, so if Giles doesn't perform, you know, Gregerson could go into that role. But I love the way A.J. Hinch handles his players and takes that pressure and kind of turns around. They embrace the target. They embrace, you know, being the team that is being chased. And I think if Giles can handle handle that role and listen to the manager kind of keeps things loose around there, I think, you know, the stuff that he has a high degree of having a level of success that, you know, they're expecting, quite frankly. They traded all their five guys for him. So, yeah, you know, I think it's really a lot of that's how you kind of handle that internally. And I do think he's got plenty of support there in the organization.
Yeah, I agree as well. And to wrap up that discussion on Ken Giles, he hopefully is the piece that, like we said, the Astros were missing last year, and maybe the last piece of the puzzle to get them over the hump if they qualify for the postseason again here in 2016. Within that same Astros team, Duke, another few guys who are moving into new roles, Tyler White and, you know, A.J. Reed, who is one of the premier prospects in all of baseball, not going to be with the big league club out of spring training, but I think a guy that we could see before year's end. And you know, Tyler White, there's going to be a lot of attention on him as the season progresses.
Well, White's a great story because he was a college draft in the round 32 or 33, right in that range. And he basically flat out won the job. He came in, had a competition with Jonathan Singleton, with A.J. Reed, with White, and White won it. And you know, have to give him credit because this guy's hit everywhere he's been. He hasn't had a ton of power, but he's been a guy that understands the strike zone. And so from the right-handed side, he doesn't need to be a middle-of-the-lineup back because they have guys like Correa and Rasmus, Gattis when he comes back. I mean, they have enough thunder power, Gomez certainly, and Springer, Altuve at the top. So he just has to do his thing at the bottom of the lineup, somewhere down there where he can produce and play the defense that they're expecting out of him. But it's a great story. And then they have A.J. Reed in case he falters a little bit. Reed would be a guy that they can bring up. He's always hitting the minor leagues too. He's got the high upside, and so the two of them are really kind of interesting contrast, I believe. Where they almost, I talked to Jeff Luno recently. He said there might be room for both, but I think as you look and try to shake out the at bats, it's better that one of them go to the minor leagues and just continue to play every day. And that one right now is Reed, but they could very easily flip-flop by the end of the month.
Yeah, it sure seems like it. And I think, you know, it's human nature to be disappointed if you're a young guy, you're battling for a spot in spring training. You lose out, you get sent down to AAA. But I think in the case of, you know, A.J. Reed or other guys in baseball, other prominent prospects like Lucas Giolito with the Nationals, those two great promising pitchers in the Pirates organization, Tyler Glasnow and Jameson Taillon. These are guys that, while they may be initially disappointed that they're not with the big league club, they know that, you know, come very soon, whether because of injury or underperformance, they could get the call sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, right. And I think that's the one thing. Really, when you look at even some of the, you know, across the game, all the younger players are on the move. They know more than anything else that if you're swinging the bat well in AAA or AA, you get that opportunity a lot quicker than you used to. And I think that's the interesting change in the game. It's been that way in Houston. They've done it. I mean, shoot, last year, Correa at this time, well, everyone thought he'd be on the move early in the season. Sure enough, he was called up in June. Ended up being an MVP candidate, hitting in the three spot for the Astros almost right as soon as he got there to the big league. So these guys get an opportunity and are inserted into the kind of high pressure situations right from the start, and they seem to be able to handle it well.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You look back to last year, like you just mentioned, Correa, Francisco Lindor came up, had an immediate impact. You know, I mean, what a dynamic duo that could be at that shortstop position for years to come in the American League, Lindor and Correa. And I think that it's just a different mindset now in that, you know, there's not this waiting period, if you will, with younger guys because we've seen so many success stories, most prominently Mike Trout and Bryce Harper, guys who have been so good at such a young age that now it almost creates something of an unfair expectation for prospects across baseball because we've seen so many elite prospects come up and mash right away, or if you're a pitcher, you know, have success right away. And that's just kind of the state of the game right now.
Well, yeah, I think you have to give a lot of credit to the player development staffs because they are getting them ready sooner. There's more pressure to have inexpensive talent at the major league level, so you have to find ways to develop them quickly. And there's still a lot of development that goes on at the major league level. Some of this, they aren't completely fine-tuned players when they get to the big leagues a lot of times. That's where your coaching staff helps out too. You know, Manny Machado is another instance. Manny didn't even really have a good minor league season going on the year that they brought him up, a similar year as Trout and Harper. So, you know, even guys like him who, you know, if you think he can handle the major league level and his performance is just average, you're getting some teams bringing them up, promoting them, and seeing results at the major league level, because sometimes their talent kind of comes out at the highest level. They are somewhat bored at the minor league level, yeah. And all of a sudden they get their opportunity. So, to me, that's the aspect that you kind of lean towards giving the organization the benefit of the doubt, since they know the player and they know his makeup.
2 days away from opening day, opening night of 2016, we have only begun to scratch the surface. There's going to be a lot of moving and shaking this baseball season, as there is every single year. And we're going to be here all year long, all 162 games and the postseason, to document it all for the On the Move podcast presented by Penske. For Jim Duquette, I'm Matt Wehmeyer signing off. We'll see you next time.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.